If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First of all, it's free, which for us is really important. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Emergency Docs. I'm Dr. R. Please keep in mind that the content of this episode does not constitute medical advice, but is purely for the purpose of education. This episode was sponsored by the National Geographic Society's Emergency Fund for Journalists. Today, we're bringing back a guest who has talked with us before, Peggy Hayes. As you may recall, Peggy is a nurse anesthetist and witnessed her husband have a heart attack on the side of a mountain in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. The medics and staff were able to resuscitate Jim, who, after a long recovery, is now doing well. After that episode, Peggy and I talked a bit about PTSD after her experience, as well as PTSD in the healthcare community after traumatic experiences. We also talked about how the healthcare community tends to ignore sadness and anxiety and not talk about the traumas and difficulties we endure. So Peggy and I decided this would be a great topic for another episode. And so with that, we are so grateful to have you back, Peggy.
Thank you so much for wanting to do this episode in the first place. I think it's so important to shed light on this topic, and my hope is to demystify PTSD and to remove perceived perception of shame. And I'm just really grateful to be here. Thank you.
Well, we're very grateful to have you. Those are such important topics, and I'm so glad we'll get a chance to address some of that today. So today we're talking about PTSD, and PTSD stands for post-traumatic stress disorder, which is a disorder characterized by difficulty recovering after being a part of or witnessing a traumatic event. Peggy has had many traumas as a result of Jim's cardiac arrest, not the least of which is watching everything happen moment to moment and actually giving Jim CPR. However, Peggy is also a medical professional and has had many traumas as a result of her work in the medical field. Having gone through all of these traumas and then emphasized by the events with her husband, Peggy realized she was experiencing PTSD and sought help. So Peggy, I know this has been difficult to talk about in the past, but can you tell us a bit more about the trauma with Jim and your sister and the pandemic and all of these things rolled into one?
Absolutely. So we were skiing in Wyoming when Jim had a heart attack on top of a mountain. I had to start emergency measures. A few minutes later, a vacationing emergency room doctor skied up to assist me, which is phenomenal in itself. And what seemed like a lifetime later, the ski patrol en masse came to save Jim's life. So we were then life flighted to Idaho, where we stayed for 6 days, and then again life flighted to the University of Utah, where we stayed for 27 days. So all in, Jim endured 10 days on an Impella heart pump, 11 days of intubation, upper and lower GI bleeds, several scares of a stroke, multiple days with high rates of AFib and flutter. And to top it off, he had acalculus, cholecystitis, and pancreatitis that resulted in sepsis. We were in the hospital a total of 33 days, but finally left for home on April 2nd. And on June 1st, he had another heart attack where I performed CPR on him again in our home until the paramedics came around. So 2 weeks later, my brother calls to tell me my sister had been diagnosed with lung cancer. She was diagnosed on June 1st, the same day that Jim went down with his heart attack. So all I have to say is you can't make this stuff up. And don't ever ask what's next, because you really don't ever want to know what's next. So I had gone back to work in May, and a whole new world of the pandemic anesthesia was there awaiting me, and lots of new protocols, out of operating room intubations, and just such a different environment from when I had left prior to Jim having his heart attack. So I think that about wraps it up.
That is so much for one person to handle. I mean, every time I hear you talk about this, I'm just so amazed at your resilience and, you know, how you've been able to handle all of these things, because traumas compound, you know, they can really add up. So I just remain incredibly impressed with you. Can you also give me a couple examples of how your work as a medical provider could contribute to PTSD?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. So I'd say, especially in the early months of the pandemic, you know, gearing up in the PAPR, which is one of those powered air purifying respirators. It's like, you know,
basically looks like a space helmet.
Yeah, you're totally in a space outfit and you're trying to get into that gear as quickly as possible so that you can run up to the ICU for intubation after intubation. Literally, sometimes we'd have multiple intubations at the same time where they're like, okay, now you need to go to this room next. And that in itself was a whole new world for me. With these intubations, especially with COVID, knowing that this could be that person's possibly their last breath, you know, off of a machine, that really does get to you. And at the same time, not really knowing if that's the right medical treatment, you know, at the time. And it's seeing not only the older people, but the young and fairly healthy people die again and again. Or sometimes it's doing big case where the person's very sick, begin with. And then there's a lot of blood loss. You're working hard and fast, not just physically, but mentally for hours. Sometimes you're invested in that person's life and the outcome for them. And when that case is over, you know, you drop them off into the recovery room, pack you, and then you're expected to move along to the next case. And I'm like, we're humans. And sometimes we need to process and take a breath before we shift to the next case. So throughout my career, I was thinking about this for this episode, I have 6 distinctive events from anesthesia that are blazed in my memory. And I can tell you pretty much everything about that person and what happened. And these 30 years ago were the first 2. So these weren't deaths that occurred either. These events, they just scarred me.
And again, you know, those events sort of add up and compound over time. And when you don't have time in between those events to process them, I think it becomes even more difficult to sort of move on, like you were saying, from one room to the next room to the next room to the next room. And as you and I were talking before this episode, I realized, like you were saying, there are specific airways that I really remember. I remember everything about the patient, their family, what their airway looked like. And those are just sort of emblazoned in my memory probably forever. And while it's not something that when it happens every once in a while, you can't handle or move on from, but like you were saying, when it happens day after day after day, multiple times a day, it can become very difficult to sort of process and move through some of those traumas. But I'm sure those are just a few of the many examples of mental, emotional, psychological trauma that you've experienced in your career and life. But in reality, there's probably even more that aren't remembering and are sort of repressed. So as we've been saying, those traumas can add up, they can become difficult to handle. And so we have another guest with us today who's going to tell us a bit about how one can learn to cope with trauma and resolve some of the symptoms of PTSD. So Kelly Larson is a licensed marriage and family therapist, director of the Pacific Counseling and Trauma Center, and brain spotting trainer. And so we are so grateful to have you with us today to talk to us more about PTSD and recovery. Welcome, Kelly.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on. And Peggy, I am just so in awe of how you have made it your mission to just turn around and use your experience to provide so much education and insight and awareness. And it just means so much to be able to circle back with you and see all that you've done since then and to see that glow in your face and that skip in your step. It's just, I'm really grateful to have been a part of your journey. So thank you for reaching out in general. And Elena, thank you for having me on. My hope for this discussion today is that there's so many misconceptions about trauma and how it impacts people that we can kind of simplify what it might look like in our systems when they're overwhelmed by trauma so that we can start to spot it a little bit easier in ourselves and in others.
Thank you so much. We're so grateful to have you here and really looking forward to digging into this some more. So let's talk about the trauma response. Can you tell me a little bit more about how it works?
Yes. So one of the really big misconceptions about trauma is that in order for it to be really worthy of being considered a trauma, a lot of people perceive that there has to be an actual genuine threat to life. So we'll think combat veterans or armed robbery or a really serious car accident. Those are obvious big traumas. But really, the truth is that the way that trauma impacts us individually can be so subjective and quite insidious in nature for a lot of people. So I think if we can shift the focus from what is it that causes trauma and more onto what does it look like when our systems are actually overwhelmed by traumatic experiences, we can start to spot it a little easier. The big traumas are obvious, but it's more of like the compounding effect of the daily stressors that can kind of surprise people that maybe my body is actually stuck in this response as well. So if we look at a regulated nervous system that's not being impacted by trauma, we're all going to experience fluctuations in a stress response or a calming response throughout the day. So if you're driving down the freeway and somebody pumps on their brakes unexpectedly, a normal regulated nervous system will feel a flood of stress response. And then once we recognize that you're safe and that the danger has passed, our body will regulate back down to its normal baseline. What happens with trauma is it will push your nervous system out of its capacity to regulate itself. So one of two things will kind of happen when that goes on. A lot of times it will push your system into an overly sympathetic state. So your sympathetic nervous system is overactivated and it's stuck on. And Peggy, you're shaking your head because I think you know about this. The cluster of symptoms that you're going to look at is heightened senses of anxiety, more panic than you're used to, restlessness or difficulty sleeping. For some people, it can be a really short fuse, so just way quicker to anger and reactivity. You know, difficulty sleeping, it can go all the way down to the GI tract of irritable bowel syndrome or diarrhea. It can be hypervigilance, that exaggerated startle response. So kind of some of those more like on edge, stuck on, go, 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 can't rest types of symptoms will happen with an overly sympathetic nervous system. Not all of those symptoms for everybody, but that's kind of the common cluster of possibilities. Sometimes it'll go the opposite way, where your nervous system gets stuck off. So that's going to be indicative of an overly parasympathetic nervous system. And that's going to look a lot more like a typical display of depression. So chronic fatigue, a lot of oversleeping, but not feeling rested, exhaustion, floating through your day and not really feeling anything, feeling sort of numb, losing motivation. And when we're looking at the GI symptoms with that, some constipation can be present as well. So it's really affecting the whole system. And usually one person or people will go from one to the other, or sometimes switch between the two of them. When we're looking at emergency medicine or emergency responders, they kind of have to be in the fight or flight stuck on when they're on shift. But what happens is they get off and they flip right into the overly parasympathetic. They're in their room, they're not engaging with their family, their body has to go into the retreat mode. So those are some of the symptoms of my body and my nervous system is completely hijacked by prolonged stress or trauma.
That all makes a lot of sense. Thank you so much for that incredible explanation. So Peggy, how does this compare to what you experienced with Jim?
I was just listening to Kelly and thinking, I didn't know all that even when we did our therapy. But here I go with what I'm going to say. And it just matches up to what Kelly has just explained. So in the hospital, I immediately started to have an irrational fear that if I left Jim, something bad would happen to him. So that meant going to eat or to leave for the night, I would get super upset. I didn't even know what this was all about, but I knew it was totally irrational. Like just going to eat, I would just freak out. So I called a friend to update her, you know, about Jim, and she's also a family counselor. And she's the one that told me, you're having anxiety. And I was like, oh, this is what anxiety is. I don't really like this. So that's first when I started to know that I'm going to need help getting rid of this. And seeing Jim's face on the mountain, that didn't really start until we got home from the hospital. So that part of my PTSD really didn't take effect until he was home and in my mind, I guess, safe. And then other things, you know, started to trigger.
So after recognizing that you were having a lot of difficulty recovering from these events, you decided to seek help. So tell us a bit more about what you tried and what worked and didn't work.
So while Jim was in the hospital, I used adult coloring books. They were given to me by that friend who was a counselor. So she overnighted these adult coloring books. And so those kind of helped me focus on something else. And it really helped quiet my mind. But we finally got home. My first tactic was, of course, ignoring it, right? And that definitely does not help. And then I started to see Jim's face on the mountain. And just at various points in the day, not generally when I was sleeping, I wouldn't wake up from that, but all of a sudden I would just, you know, be sitting doing something normal and I would, you know, see his pale, foaming mouth face. And I knew I had to get all that stuff out of my head. I'm like, I can't keep seeing this vision over and over again. So also I would just be doing maybe gardening or anything. And I would just burst into tears, just horrible, like very boohoo tears. And I think after Jim's second heart attack, that's when it drove even deeper into my brain. I was irrationally ever vigilant, checking on him napping over and over, just going in, checking, is he breathing? You know, I'd sleep with my hand on his chest so I could check for his breathing, make sure that he was still alive. And, you know, where's the phone? Is, you know, how many steps to the door if I have to let the paramedics in, that kind of thing. There, it was a lot of kind of irrational things happening. And I wouldn't even leave him to go for a walk. That's how I was like, I was in the house with him all the time. So friends and neighbors, they brought us food because I was like, I'm not going to the store. I'm not leaving him at all. And so this is when I decided to reach out to my healthcare system. And then they got me in contact with a psychiatrist. And that psychiatrist, he prescribed a medication known to help PTSD in specific, which raises serotonin levels in the brain. And although I think a lot of us don't really want to be medications, I thought of this as my bridge to the other side until I could seek treatment and to get help.
And so then at that point, you reached out to the Pacific Counseling and Trauma Center where you started using brain spotting. So Kelly, can you tell us more about what brain spotting is and how it works?
Yes. So brain spotting is something I am extremely passionate about. So I can talk all day, but I'll try and wrap this up as succinctly as I can and not geek out too hard on it. But brain spotting is basically just a brain-based therapy that's using our eyes and our field of vision to locate where in the brain a person is storing and holding trauma or any kind of a negative experience. So it doesn't have to be a single incident trauma, although it can be remarkably rapidly effective for a single incident trauma. It could be something as diffuse as just a pressure that you wake up with on your chest every day, or this sense of worthlessness or hopelessness. So any kind of negative experience, we're able to use our field of vision to access where it's actually located so that we can process it and release it. So we have this tagline in brain spotting that is, where you look affects how you feel. And so to give kind of a felt sense example of what we mean by that, I would love to walk you all through a quick exercise. So I'll do it with the two of you, but for anybody who is listening at home, if you are driving a car or doing any other activity that requires your focus, please only participate to the level you're able to safely. So everybody just kind of take a quick breath, get settled in your body real quick. So I want you all to think about some sort of an issue that's bothering you. And so since we don't have time to process a big trauma, we're thinking on a scale of 0 to 10 of disturbance or feeling upset, something that might be a 4 or a 5, maybe causing a little bit of stress or worry or anxiety. Just try and think of something that you have access to that's bothering you. So I'll give you just a moment to think of that.
And are we opening our eyes or closing our eyes?
Whatever feels organic. There's no direction. It's just follow whatever feels right for you to connect into that. So once you've thought about that issue, I want you to just see if you can really connect into it in whatever way makes sense to you. Thinking about the worst part about it or how it's impacting you, and really let your body get connected into what this issue is. Let yourself start to feel any feelings or emotions associated with that. If you're able to identify what emotion it is, see if that's possible for you. And once you feel that, just scan your body from head to toe and notice any sensations, no matter how subtle they are, that are going on in your body. Maybe a tightness or a flutter or a tension. Just notice where your body's holding that. Notice 0 to 10 how strong it feels in this moment. And when you're ready, look at any still point in your room to your left. You can move your head or just your eyes. It doesn't matter. And just notice what happens to that sensation. Does it change at all? Does it stay the same? Does it decrease or increase? And now look at any still point in the center. Notice any changes in the sensation here. And when you're ready, look at any still point to the right, just tuning into this issue and the sensations. And notice what happens. Good. All right. Now shake it out real quick. Did either of you notice or want to share what you experienced when you switch different positions?
I'll go.
Yeah, go ahead, Peggy.
Because I've done this before. So I can immediately feel it's whatever the problem is, it always comes up in my throat. And this time, although the traumas with Jim, it seemed that it was always off to the right, but this time definitely it was my left. I could absolutely feel it up in my throat. I look center, it goes away. I look right, it went away.
Wonderful. So if we were to be working together, would you want to go where there was nothing or would you want to work on where there was something?
No, I would definitely work where there was something.
Awesome. That's so interesting. It's to the left. Is this a totally different issue?
Yes.
Wow, I love it. You never know what to expect with that. And what about for you, Elena? Did you notice any perceived change when you moved your eyes?
Yeah, I think I felt an increased tension when I looked to the left. I guess there's some muscle tension that I was kind of feeling, or kind of epigastric, like mid-stomach. But it didn't seem as strong when I looked in other directions, which is really interesting to me, like just trying to figure out why and understand that.
Yes. So that's kind of the challenge, is like the trying to put the why to why this experience that was discovered 18 years ago by accident. But over time, Dr. David Grand discovered it. He's a remarkable mentor of mine, really brilliant man. But since he accidentally discovered it in his therapy room, brain science has really helped us understand more about why it is that this works. So if we go all the way back to when we are all developing in the womb, the retina actually originates as an outgrowth of the developing brain. And on the back of the retina, there are brain cells that connect into the thalamus, which then goes all the way down the spinal thalamic tract, which is connected into every organ in our body. So when we are saying where you look affects how you feel, it's really not just where we're looking. It's a highly neurological and physiological experience that has really profound psychological consequences. So when we can use our eyes to tap into different places in our brain, we can locate where we're storing our issues and how much it impacts our entire system and help process and release it.
That's incredible, and taking me back to anatomy for sure.
I'll make a comment here about that. I say I had no idea, but my close friends will know that I, during all of this, when we were still in the hospital, I kept feeling like, am I stroking? My left eye and my whole left side of my face would just have such incredible pain. Like I kept touching it and it would hurt so bad for that whole like 33 days until I finally got to the brain spotting and could release that. It was so crazy to me. It almost felt a little woo-woo. I was like, wow, how'd that happen? And then I didn't have any pain on my left side of my face or my eye, my left eye.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's pretty remarkable the things that I see in the therapy room, that the things that are seemingly so unconnected to the emotional trauma that are happening physically, remarkably improving. We will never claim to treat any kind of medical disorders. It feels almost miraculous when I see somebody coming in with profound MS and working just on their childhood trauma and noticing that their symptomology has gone down so intensely because the body is not holding such an overproduction of cortisol anymore. And then cortisol leads to inflammation, which is the source of all pain within a lot of chronic illnesses, that, you know, if we can release the stress and the cortisol response in the body, we can also help so much of the physiological responses that are keeping people in that chronic pain and chronic fatigue that leads to depression and anxiety as well. So it just really need to be able to work within the whole system in the therapy room.
So from the exercise that we did, when someone's identified maybe a direction of increased tension or increased symptom, how would they go about relieving that then?
Yes. So, you know, doing that exercise, which is such a really brief, tiny snippet of what a session might look like. So if you were to go in and get some brain spotting therapy, one of the things that your client or your therapist would do would be to help you connect into the issue that you want to work on. So we kind of, you know, symbolically, I look at it like we got to turn on the light in the brain so we can find it. So we're going to spend as much time as you need trying to really connect into it, really on a somatic level, if possible, because body awareness is really stored in the brainstem, which is in the midbrain, which is what holds a lot of our trauma. So we're going to want to connect into that. And then we're going to use a variety of different methods to help you find an eye position. So if you were able to notice yourself that on this side, I feel it stronger, we use kind of like what we call a magic wand, but it's really just a pointer to help find and precisely hold a spot where there's the perceived strongest felt sense of activation. This gives us some information. It's almost like a lighthouse in the brain saying, hey, there's a file here that's important. And so by keeping our maintaining a fixed gaze in that spot, it'll essentially hold open that file of what we're working on. And by being present in the actual part of the brain where this is stored and being mindful of what's going on in our body, it allows it to unwind and reprocess and release to find some resolution there.
It's almost like trigger point injections for trauma.
Yes, I'm assuming you're right. I am not a doctor, but that sounds right.
It basically, a trigger point injection is where when people have areas of muscle tension or muscle strains, you can inject lidocaine or water, even use dry needling to break up some of those areas of tension. And it leads to release of some of those muscle issues. So
that sounds like a perfect metaphor to explain what we're doing in brain spotting. Exactly. So it's really kind of a precise way of locating where these individualized capsules that kind of get stuck and fragmented off when our systems are overwhelmed, we find where they are. And just by being in them, and allowing ourselves to be mindfully aware of the sensations and the experiences and the emotions going on when we're in that capsule allows it to start to release.
So why is brain spotting or other methods better than talk therapy for PTSD?
Yeah, so unprocessed trauma or prolonged exposure to high stress. So I don't want to single this out just to incidents. You know, people that are in high stress jobs where they kind of have to be in the fight or flight mode, or people who are raised in really dysregulated households where they didn't know if they were safe or going to be cared for. This type of prolonged stress or traumatic experience is all stored in the limbic system in the midbrain. So if you were to drill down in your brain from the bridge of your nose back, it's basically from the mid nose down is where a lot of this trauma and anxiety symptoms are stored. Now, the prefrontal cortex is our executive functioning in our brain that we'll use during talk therapy. That's remarkable for problem solving strategies or for even building good insight, but it doesn't have the capacity to have good communication with that limbic system in that midbrain. So you could work on your trauma all day by talking about it, but you're not going to really get to access it to get any kind of a release. So some people will feel, oh, I feel so much better after that therapy session, but there's no bottom-up processing there. So it's just kind of back to the same feeling by the next week. Now, research has shown us that brain spotting with relative ease is able to access the midbrain and the limbic system. So by being able to access the part of the brain in that file, like I said, where it's stored and just opening it up and being mindfully aware of it, we're able to access the part of the brain where it's stored so that we can productively process it through and release it.
What other methods are useful for recovering from PTSD or depression and anxiety associated with a traumatic event?
Well, there is one brain trick that I feel like not many people know about, but I feel like I want to spread to the world. I tell everybody, use this. You don't need any tools. You can do it anywhere. It's called vergence therapy. Vergence therapy is something that you can do when you're feeling a heightened sense of anxiety, or perhaps you suffer from panic attacks and you know your triggers and you want to be able to stop or decrease the intensity of your panic attacks. Or if you know, like, you know, before coming on this podcast, I got a little wave of performance anxiety. I was like, I'm going to do some vergence and help my body calm down. So I'm going to walk you guys through another exercise if you want to do this with me. And again, any listeners at home, please only participate if you can do so safely. But if you can put your finger up in front of your face at about eye level, about maybe 1 foot away from your face, if you can, you start by gazing at the tip of your finger. And then look through your finger and let your gaze fall as far back as you can see in the room or the space you are. So right now I'm looking through my window at a tree. And then bring your gaze back to your fingertip. So you're going to alternate every 3 to 10 seconds at a fast pace between looking near and then far. So keep looking at the near space and the far space and alternate between doing that. And as you do it, I'm going to explain what's going on here. So as your eyes converge or come together, which is looking at the near spot, or diverge or go further out, which is looking at the further spot, you're activating what's called the oculocardiac reflex. And this is going to give you a really quick parasympathetic nerve response, which will help slow down your heart rate, slow down your breathing, and release body tension. So this is a fantastic tool if you feel that like tightening in your chest after some sort of an interaction with somebody, or if you're feeling performance anxiety, or just your normal symptoms of anxiety that you're waking up with, this can help just bring a little bit more of a reflexive relaxation feeling in your body.
Awesome. Yeah, I do feel like I had a sensation of maybe my breathing slowing down, but my arm was getting tired. So I don't know about the release of muscle tension. I probably shouldn't hold it so high.
You know, you can rest your elbow and grab a pen, or, you know, even I've got a water bottle right here. Really all it is how can I move my eyes together and move them apart? And looking at near and then far is an easy way to do that. So I've got high school students that come to me and they're like, I don't want to look weird in class if I'm doing this. I don't want anyone to know I'm like having anxiety. So I just say, just, you know, casually hold your pencil up and just look like you're gazing off. Like nobody has to know what you're doing it. You can do it anywhere, anytime. So that's one really big tool I like to teach people. But I love what Peggy said earlier, like the adult coloring books, what that is a sense of mindfulness, which is really at the core of what brain spotting is. It's bringing yourself into the present moment, into what you're doing in that experience, which can help distract your mind from all of the fears of the past, the anxiety of the future, that stuff that can really get you feeling overwhelmed. So anything that can bring you into the moment. So meditative exercises, yoga, and absolutely somatic body-based therapies are the most effective for trauma. So we're looking at brain spotting. EMDR is a great tool, or somatic experiencing as well.
All sound like great tools.
And I wanted to add a couple that I loved. The first one, of course, I learned from Kelly. I still love my bilateral music. And yes, right. And so what I'm saying is I just learned all this from Kelly. So what I found out about it is when you're being held captive by that bilateral stimulation, two things happen. You can't think of the problem and you start to feel relaxed. So which leads to in the ways of the memory of the problem is stored. So you can't think of the problem, remember, and you start to feel relaxed. So I use it even when I'm just doing finances or start to feel anxious about, you know, whatever, I pop it in, even pop it in gardening. I love, love, love my bilateral music. And I tell everybody about that. And the other thing I liked was a book that I started, that I read, and I'm rereading it again. And it's called The Body Keeps the Score. And so this is really an amazing book, I felt like, because I'm so science-based. And sometimes I felt like things were a little like, what? I don't understand, you know, how all this works, the brain spotting. So this book, it's over 30 years of research on trauma and the brain. So again, I loved the science part of it. And what the other thing I learned, which was a biggie for me, is that it's not about the mind. It's about the brain.
Yes.
So I think sometimes in medicine, we think, oh, I can, you know, pull myself up by my bootstraps and carry on to the next thing. And it's not about that. It's those little scars on the brain.
I love that, Peggy. I hope that we can really start to reframe this as it's not that you're weak and not able to get a control of your emotions. It's really that your nervous system is hijacked. It's a physiological condition, just like if you had any kind of a medical illness that can be treated as long as we give it the same space that we would anything else.
Yeah, love it.
On the bilateral note, so just for anybody that's listening, that can be found for free in so many different locations. It has to be listened to with headphones on. So if you have access to YouTube or Spotify or iTunes or any place that you can find music, if you just type in bilateral music and plug it in with some headphones, it will alternate with music going from one side to the other. And that is another way to activate that parasympathetic reflex, which will help slow down your breathing. And if you can add the added bilateral movement of walking while you're listening to it, you're going to double up on those benefits.
I did not know that. I'm going to start doing that.
There you go.
Those are all amazing resources. I think I'm going to have to check that book out. I love when I can understand the reasoning behind why something works. But I also think, you know, when you experience something and feel it start working, then, you know, you don't necessarily need to know the science behind it to know that it works.
Yes, that's so funny. One of the phrases in brain spotting is you don't have to know what it is to know that it is, because you see some pretty profound things that happen with the way some people process. Sometimes people are shaking or twitching or getting hot or cold, all nervous symptom or system reactions. And sometimes that's what I'll say is, you don't have to know what's happening to know that something important is happening. Just notice where that goes and we'll see what happens. So I really like what you said. But then later on, your neocortex is like, wait, let me understand more so I can lean in even deeper next time. So that's why I love to geek out on the brain science behind it. It's like, we know something important is happening here, but let's follow up and understand it on a logical level.
Exactly. And Peggy, I also remember you saying that gratitude has played a huge role in your recovery. And you and Jim have been very intentional about reaching out to the healthcare teams and the Lucas engineers who helped treat Jim to thank them. So can either of you talk a bit more about how gratitude or changing mental models can help with recovery?
So right away, Jim and I were so, so grateful for all the skill and experience we received in the hospital. I kept a notebook with most of the doctors and nurses' names so that I could write thank you letters later. It wasn't just a conscious effort. I just always knew, of course, you would be grateful and thank these people and their excellence and their expertise and to let them know that this is what all of their education and their hard work results in and really changes people's lives. And I'm not just saying Jim's life, but all of his family's lives. So it's not just one person. So with the first brain spotting, when I hooked up with Kelly, the very first thing I was working on getting rid of seeing Jim's face, right? That would just pop up. And so the first thing that happened was, is my brain just changed it to gratitude. I didn't know it. Like I wasn't mindfully doing it. My brain just changed it to gratitude for all the people that were on the mountain that could help save Jim's life and get him to that next destination. So that really helped a lot.
And Kelly, did you have any thoughts?
Yes. So I think gratitude is profoundly helpful. But the reality is a lot of people that are really steeped in anxiety, trauma, panic, depression, they don't actually have access to some of those more positive emotions like gratitude and hope. So what I really honor that's just where our system is. So, you know, brain spotting is so client oriented and person oriented that it's, we're going to work with where you are. And I find that when we are able to regulate the nervous system and the brain more, it just allows such greater access to those more positive neural networks, like the spontaneous gratitude, like you talked about. You weren't looking for that, Peggy. It was found through regulating that dysregulation in your brain of seeing his face. And so sometimes you kind of need to go through the muck and able to find that light and be able to lean into the gratitude, but it's in such an authentic bottom-up way. It's not you trying to force from the top down, feel grateful, but it's not really there. I have so many other things that I'm feeling pissed off about or hurt or scared. So I think that's where you just kind of need to honor, this is where I'm at. And my intention is to find that gratitude. But until I really get through the weeds, I'm not going to be able to access it quite yet. So it's a really good tool to get to those more positive spaces that you're hoping to get to.
I love that gratitude was just innately there for you and Jim, Peggy, because as medical providers, like you and I discussed before, so rarely do we get to see the recovery, especially because, you know, you're there intubating someone and I'm in the emergency department. And so we really see people at their worst moments and don't get to see them once they're better. And so I love so much that you've gone to all of these emergency responders and let them know what a difference their work made, because I'm sure that has meant the world to them. And those I've talked to, I know it has meant the world to them.
Well, it really means the world to us, to let them know, like, we're okay. You guys were on your A game and it makes a difference in a lot of people's lives. So we're very fortunate that we've been able to do that.
So if any of our listeners want to learn more, what resources would you suggest?
So if you want to learn any more about brain spotting, you can go to brainspotting.com to go to the main global website. If you're interested in seeking therapeutic services, Pacific Counseling and Trauma Center has a lot of therapists that are highly, highly trained to the fullest degree in brain spotting. Any one of them can do some great work with whatever trauma or stress you're dealing with and can do via Zoom. So you can go to www.pacifictraumacenter.com and learn more about what we do there as well as brain spotting.
And are you only available for patients in California?
We have a couple of therapists that are able to see it using a different degree. But for the most part, we do treat people in California, but we can help turn people to different states. But brainspotting.com should also have a directory that can help find people local to you that are trained or certified in brain spotting.
Yeah, I know we have a lot of international listeners. So being able to access brainspotting.com is probably an ideal resource for them to reach out to if they need.
There are people all over the world being trained in brain spotting every single weekend. So it's globally growing by the minute.
Amazing. Well, any final thoughts either of you would like to share before we wrap up this episode?
Yeah, I want to say, when I returned to work, I was very open about my experience with PTSD. I wasn't ashamed about it at all. It wasn't anything I could help. So, and I couldn't help but think that brain spotting could help so many people, from first responders, just think of all that they see, to those of us in medicine. So trauma comes in all forms and there's help and it works. That's what I want people to know. There is help and it works. And again, this is not about the conscious mind. It's about the brain.
Yeah. And also just to add on to that, it doesn't necessarily have to be trauma related to the medical field or, like you were saying before, to a loss of life. Trauma can occur in any number of ways throughout your life. And so whatever trauma might be limiting you is something that reach out and potentially investigate further.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you so much, both of you, for having me on. This lit me talking to both of you about this very important issue. And Peggy, I'm so glad you're shining so bright. Thank you for all that
you do.
Thanks,
Kelly. Yes. I still get it here.
Thank you both so much for joining us. We really appreciated all of your insight, Kelly, and we really appreciate your willingness to share your experiences, Peggy. All right. Well, that's it for this episode. Our guests today were Peggy Hayes, a nurse anesthetist and trauma survivor, and Kelly Larson at the Pacific Counseling and Trauma Center. If you'd like to learn more about PTSD and brain spotting, you can visit www.pacifictraumacenter.com or brainspotting.com. If you like what you hear, please give us a like, subscribe, or comment. And you can also reach out to us at theemergencydocs.com. This episode was supported by the National Geographic Society's Emergency Fund for Journalists. Until next time. We'll be right back.